In the garage of Dr. Frank Conrad, on November 2nd, 1920, the first scheduled pre-advertised radio program in the United States went on the air. Station KDKA was broadcasting returns of the presidential race on the evening of Election Day. From a humble beginning in a Pittsburgh garage to the sumptuous studios of the national radio networks in New York, Chicago, and Hollywood, these are the years we refer to as the Golden Age of Radio.
Here's the Manhattan merry-go-round that brings you the bright side of life, that whirls you in music to all the big night spots of New York town, to hear the top songs of the week sung so clearly you can understand every word in singing your
time. Al Kemp on the air for Griffin.
It's time to shine, shine your shoes and
Tony Home Permanent presents.
This is Nora Drake.
The Golden Age of Radio is brought to you by Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, serving Connecticut residents since 1889. This is the time for New Year's resolutions. The Burritt Mutual Savings Bank would like to offer you one which may be the best one you ever made. Why not resolve to open a savings account at the Burritt and join in on the fun of helping Burritt reach its second $100 million in assets? You may do this at either the Main or Slater Road office, New Britain, the West Hartford office at Corbin's Corner, or the new office which will open soon on the Wethersfield Rocky Hill Town Line. Save where your funds are insured, where the highest dividends are paid, and where you join in the progress of the fast-growing, strong Burritt Mutual Savings Bank. Highest dividends paid, cordial service rendered. Make that resolution now, today. Save beginning with 1971 at Burritt Mutual Savings Bank. And now your host, Dick Bertel.
Good evening. And with me once again is the man with 2,000 hours of old-time radio memories on tape, Ed Corcoran. Ed, how are you tonight?
Very good, Dick. It's nice to be here again with you.
Well, this is an exciting show because our guest is Richard Dana, the Assistant Director of the Division of Humanities and Communication Arts at Manchester Community College. Richard Dana was a program supervisor in the broadcast department of Young and Rubicam and a freelance radio writer during the Golden Age of Radio. Dick, I don't want to date you. You certainly had an active role in television as well, but you did start in radio, didn't you?
That's true. I did indeed.
And this goes back to the early 30s.
Yes, I think 1934 was the exact year.
What got you started? I'm sure that people ask you that question, and I'm going to ask you right now.
They do indeed, and here's how it happened. I was just recently out of Princeton, was quite stage-struck. I had just concluded one term at the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, trying to learn something about acting, a career which never brought me much money, but gave me a little occupation. I then, needing money, got a job as a relief investigator. But I had left my name on file with several university employment agencies in case anything came along in the respect to broadcasting. It happened that Phillips Lord, of whom you may recall, needed junior writers. I thought this would be a fine opportunity because I knew Phil was very big and very talented in broadcasting. I applied. I had no radio material to show. I had never been inside of a radio studio. But I was writing plays at the time, plays which I was not selling. But the one I happened to have in hand had a college background. I took it into Phil Lord's office, 501 Madison Avenue, and the phone girl was screening writers. I kid you not. She was indeed. She was, as I said, just out of college. She liked the play because it had a college background, and I was hired.
Well, now, I want to hear the story of your first encounter with Phillips H. Lord, because it sounds like something out of a movie script.
Well, it does indeed sound that way. I was told to go up to Phillips Lord's East River apartment, a very fashionable address, at a certain hour, and go there with the other junior neophyte writers. Incidentally, junior at that time meant we were willing to write at $23.50 a week. I tell that not in any feeling of criticism, because it was a great opportunity. I went to this luxury apartment. I was admitted to Phil's apartment by a Filipino houseboy. He took my coat and motioned me to a very grand staircase. I mounted the staircase, and there was Phillips Lord, who I recognized immediately from his many pictures. He was seated behind a great, massive Hollywood type of desk with his back to the East River and all the scenery and tugboats and so on. I sat down with the six or so other neophyte writers. We sat there in silence for a respectful 10 minutes. Finally, Phil got up and said, "Before we go any further, gentlemen, I want you to know I'm the toughest so-and-so in radio."
Was he? That
and he was.
Yes.
But you say you learned everything you knew about broadcasting from Phillips H. Lord.
Yes, I do say that. I do believe that Phillips Lord was undoubtedly the greatest teacher that I ever had. I would say of broadcast, probably also of theater. He had a natural theatrical instinct. He had perhaps a greater knowledge of how an audience responded than perhaps any other individual that I've ever known. And no wonder, he must have, because of the many fortunes and acclaim that he won through such programs as Gangbusters, We the People, Mr. District Attorney, and others.
What about the sound effects, the marching feet of Gangbusters, which identified the show so readily?
Well, then an interesting story comes to mind about the marching feet. The marching feet, they were, as you know, of course, a sound effect. It took not one but two men to produce them satisfactorily on the program as it was done over CBS. There was a period of time when the program was sponsored by a sponsor over a different network. And I well recall the first rehearsal on that other network. Phil was angry because the marching feet were not legitimate. They were not real Gangbusters' feet. He turned the sound effects department up and down. Various supervisors came rushing in with substitute feet. None of them were right. Phil then demanded that they get the feet from CBS because those sound effect feet
this
had always
been... This was
NBC
now.
This was NBC, yep. If you wish mm-hmm. to... Yes, it was NBC. It was only through the protestations of, I think, five vice presidents that he was dissuaded from calling CBS to bring the feet over to NBC. And finally, they did satisfy him.
Well, of course, the other show that I think is really one of the classics of that period was We the People. And you actually were on the show about 7 years, is that right?
Yes, yes, I was, Ed. It was a great experience. In fact, as I look back, though I didn't realize it at the time, it was one of the greatest experiences of my life because of the great variety of people that one met with these various guests from every walk of life. It might be a prospective president of the United States, it might be a great British statesman, it might be a murderer condemned to death in the near future.
Well, could you explain a little bit of the format of We the People, how you brought together these various types of elements into the program?
Each week's program would have approximately six guests. These guests would be people, as I say, from different walks of life. We ran, in fact, I originated a research department that would carefully screen newspapers, magazines, and in other ways, find prospective guests. We then would get together with Phillips Lord. We would decide the group that we thought would make a well-balanced and interesting group of people, and we invited them and went through a lot of negotiation to bring them together in a studio in New York, live, where the program was done each week.
In just a moment, we're going to hear an excerpt from We the People from your collection. But first, a word from our sponsor.
Ladies and gentlemen, this announcement is directed to all of Burritt Mutual Savings Bank's existing depositors, but more especially to the residents of Wethersfield and Rocky Hill. The Burritt Mutual Savings Bank will open a new branch office during the month of January in the Charles Schneer Shopping Center on Townline Road in Rocky Hill, just north of Route 91 and next to Caldor's. This most attractive and spacious office will be staffed by residents of Rocky Hill and Wethersfield, all who stand ready to serve you in every savings bank need. Watch for the announcement of the formal opening, and remember the Big B, the Burritt Mutual Savings Bank. Other offices in New Britain on Main Street and Slater Road, and Corbin's Corner in West Hartford. All deposits insured by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation.
Our guest tonight, Richard Dana, on the Golden Age of Radio, and we're about to hear an excerpt from We the People, Ed.
Well, this particular excerpt, Dick, was hard to come by. I only have one complete show of this title in my whole collection, and it is in two parts. One has Jack Benny, and another concerns a story of a woman in an iron lung. So why don't we listen to it, and then maybe you comment on it, Dick, whether you remember this at all from your writing days.
Fine, I'd be glad to.
Gulf Oil Companies and your neighborhood Good Gulf dealer present We the People. This is Milo Bolton welcoming you to another We the People program with the music of Oscar Bradley. Tonight, among our guests are Ella Logan,
Mary Livingston.
Hank Greenberg.
Jack Benny.
These and many other real people with real and exciting stories. Stories you hear only when the Gulf Oil Companies and your neighborhood Good Gulf dealer present We the People. For the life of your car, go Gulf. Whenever you hear that old favorite, Love and Boom, you know you're in for fun and laughter. For that's the song that means Jack Benny's on the air. But tonight, Love and Boom has an even more special meaning. For it's the 20th wedding anniversary of Jack Benny and his famous partner, Mary Livingston, one of Hollywood's most happily married couples. What's the secret behind this happy marriage? Well, tonight you're going to hear the answer from Jack and Mary themselves. So come in, Hollywood.
Congratulations, Jack Benny and Mary Livingston, on your 20th wedding anniversary, and welcome to We the People.
Thank you, Tom Hanlon.
Well, how about thanking me? I did the time.
Now, Mary, wait, it hasn't been that bad.
Maybe not. Anyhow, I won a bet.
A bet? On our 20th anniversary?
Yeah. 20 years ago, a woman bet me I couldn't stand you this long.
That sounds just like your mother.
Was your mother.
Well, she just didn't want to lose me, that's all.
And why was she trying to sell all the girls' raffle tickets?
Because your mother put her up to it.
Oh, Jack, you can't make me sorry. You can say anything you want about my mother.
Not on the air, I can't.
Oh, Jack's only joking, Tom. We're both very happy.
You and Jack?
No, me and my mother.
Now, Mary, don't be smart. You know we're happy. It says we have to be in our contract with Lucky Strike.
Well, say, how did you two meet each other?
Well, it was in a bookstore. We both were buying a copy of the same book, a novel called I Stand Condemned.
I Stand Condemned?
Yes, it's a story of a man who goes to the electric chair and leaves three lovely children, we, thee, and people. Say, Mary.
Oh, pardon me, it's your line. Yes, that is it. Mary, tell us about your honeymoon. Where did you go?
To Niagara Falls. It was wonderful. I could hardly wait to leave there for New York to tell Jack about the place.
Now, wait a minute, Mary. Do you mean you went on your honeymoon without Jack?
Yes, I had already seen the fall. I think everyone should see Niagara Falls, you know, even single people.
Well, supposing you tell me when the proposal took place.
It was a few months after we met. One night, Jack suddenly got down on one knee and proposed to me.
I did not.
You did, too.
Well, why don't you tell the truth, Mary? Listen, Tom. Here's what happened. We were sitting on the sofa in Mary's room. She dropped her handkerchief on the floor. I bent down to pick it up. The minute I got down on my knee, she said, "Oh, Jack, this is so sudden." And between this and sudden, her mother called the preacher.
But, Jack, you really did propose to Mary, didn't you?
Yes, it was pretty tough, you know, with all those interruptions.
Interruptions?
Yeah, the next time I started to propose, her father came in, saw me on my knees, and yelled, "I'll fade you for any part of a dollar."
Oh, really, Ann? What did you do this time, Mary?
I won $2 and bought the marriage license.
That's right, and I held up the bus for 2 hours. I also held Greenberg on third. Hiya, Hank.
Say, Mary, before you go, would you tell the folks what Jack gave you for an anniversary present?
Oh, the usual gift.
What's that?
A pair of shoelaces with plastic tips.
Now, Mary, why don't you tell them the truth? What about the car I gave you for your anniversary?
Did Jack really give you a car?
Uh-huh, a convertible coupe.
And what did you give Jack?
A convertible toupee.
Mary,
On a nice day, we both put our tops down.
Mary, you know, you didn't even kiss me for giving you that new car.
Well, if you really want a kiss, here it comes. Well, go on, Jack. The next item script is yours. Read the next line. Jack, read the next line.
Wait till I wipe the steam off my glasses. Good night, folks.
Good night.
At one time or another, all of us feel pretty down on our luck. Feel that the whole world is against us. Well, We the People's next guest has a story of courage and faith in a bright future that should help all of us the next time things go wrong. That guest is waiting now at our Gulf Oil microphone in Minneapolis. Come in, Minneapolis.
Hello, everybody. My name is Marion Oliver. You have to be patient. I can speak only a few words at a time, because I'm talking from an iron lung.
Who? I'm Captain Hero. Marion Gerson, the polio ward at General Hospital. That whishing sound you hear is the iron lung that keeps Marion alive. She can talk only when the iron lung is breathing out. Marion is 26 years old and a dancer. She wanted to be a musical comedy star and had a good start, too, before the war came along. For nearly 5 years, she was a USO entertainer.
I love that USO work. Even stayed with it after the war. But one day the doctors sent me home for a rest. Then, while I was still weak, polio struck me down.
When Marion came in last August, she was unconscious, completely paralyzed, and it was touch and go for a long time as to whether she'd live. But Marion had one thing we couldn't see at first, a fighting heart. As we brought her slowly back to consciousness, we found she still had the power of speech, but her lungs were paralyzed. She's strengthening her voice by the day, though, through exercises and talking.
I can wiggle my fingers now, and I'll soon move my legs. You just wait and see. I'll beat this polio yet. Thanks to you and the folks out there, and all you've done for me, through the March of Dimes. And now, if you don't mind, I'm just a bit whooped. So I'll say good night. But won't you wish upon a star to help my dreams come true?
We the people speak. This is Milo Bolton again reminding you to listen in next week. You'll meet ace comedian Milton Berle, and along with the music of Oscar Bradley, you'll also meet many other real people with real stories you hear only when
the Gulf Oil Companies and your neighborhood Good Gulf dealer present
We the People.
For the life of your car, go Gulf. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting.
It was great to hear that show again. The theme brought back memories, did it, Dick?
It certainly did. It haunts me. That music haunts me. It really does. So many years hearing it every week.
Well, Ed, I know you have questions about We the People, and we'll ask those questions right after this.
Have you ever heard of the Burritt Mutual Savings Bank and wondered where it got its name? If so, you may be interested in this explanation. The Burritt is in recognition of one of this area's most noteworthy citizens of the 1800s, Elihu Burritt, the learned blacksmith. Elihu Burritt was a self-taught linguist, a patriot and peace emissary who served his country here and abroad. The mutual came from the fact that the bank is owned by and operated for its depositors. There are no stockholders in the bank. Established in 1889, the bank has served generations of depositors and borrowers in central Connecticut and is today a large, strong, and successful institution. When you save at Burritt, you commemorate the glorious past, profit from the successful present, and share in the promise of an eventful future. Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, a proud mutual savings bank. Two offices in New Britain, one in West Hartford, and another to open in January in the Wethersfield Rocky Hill area. And now back to Dick Bertel.
Our guest tonight is Richard Dana, Assistant Director of the Division of Humanities and Communication Arts at Manchester Community College, and, among other things, a writer-producer for We the People. Well, Ed, we just heard an excerpt going back to, about 1940 or so, and I know you have some questions to ask of Dick.
Yes, Dick, I guess now the people can realize the show was kind of built on various personalities. Could you explain your role, some of the things you did on the show?
I was a writer-producer, and my job was to suggest personalities, both well-known people and average people, people out of the news, for consideration. Then a decision would be made by the producer as to who would appear, and these some 6 to 8 people would appear on the next week's show. Many of them would come out of the studio in New York City, though some, such as this lady we just heard, who was in a hospital bed in Minneapolis, would be brought in by a special line directly from the scene of her illness. My job was to go out to many of those points and produce those remote originations, both to write the script. I would first interview the guest, such as this woman, learn about her difficulties, learn her story, talk to her doctor. Then I would write the story truthfully, but making it as dramatic, truthfully as I could, and then go over it with the guest and make sure it was agreeable with her. Then she would actually read those words over the microphone. Every person was alive. It was the actual person, whether they came from their own home or from the New York studio.
And we're talking about We the People, of which writer-producer Richard Dana has many recollections, and he's sharing them on the Golden Age of Radio tonight. I want to remind our listeners that they're tuned to WTIC in Hartford, Connecticut. And there are so many names that come to mind with regard to this program, and perhaps one of the hosts might be mentioned now. There were many hosts on We the People.
Yes, wasn't Colin Bourne one of the hosts at one time,
Ed, I don't believe Colin Bourne was ever a host, though he was a guest many times. The original MC was Phillips Lord himself, the originator. Mm-hmm. Milo Bolton, whom you heard on this excerpt, he was an actor that was auditioned by us and we thought was excellent. He did the program for many years. Gabriel Heater was a very, very excellent MC for many years on the program.
Gabriel Heater, right.
And there was an incident comes to mind about his dressing room. We were broadcasting our principal act, so to speak, from a theater in New York. Gabriel Heater's MC had his own dressing room. And I recall there was a little slip-up one day because, in the interest of variety, we had very tight guests. One of the guests on that particular program was a boxing kangaroo. And one of the production assistants, wishing to place the kangaroo out of harm's way for a moment, put him in Gabe's dressing room and locked the door. You can imagine Gabe's surprise when he came hurrying in for his rehearsal, turned the key, and was met by a kangaroo on his hind legs with boxing gloves staring him in the face.
I can imagine. You use the word hypo very often with regard to that show, and I suppose that the day after the show was on the air, you'd get together, sit around, and come up with unusual ideas for next week's show. Is that basically
yes.
how it worked?
Yes, that is basically how it worked. We always, the rating game was being played at that time. We were very conscious of our rating, of our popularity. We did everything we could to increase the popularity of the show. We would choose guests from many different categories. For example, we might pick a person out of the news. He might be not a prominent person, but a person who was big in the news at that time. Let's say there was some incident, some international incident, some tragedy. We would try to be the first to bring that average person, so to speak, who for the moment was not average or above average, into the studio. On the other hand, it might be a statesman, it might be Randolph Churchill, it might be Cabot Lodge or some other person who would have a currency because he had an outstanding name.
And I wonder if you'd recall the story of the unknown soldier on We the People.
Yes. I organized a research group to look for guests, prospective guests for the program. And I recall one day a girl, rather green in the business, but she brought in a clipping from the Denver Post, I believe. It was a story of a certain Army sergeant who had been the person who actually selected the unknown soldier. And the story was that he was somehow designated to go into a chapel where four caskets had been placed, all covered with American flags. There was no name on any of the caskets, but he was given the job of selecting the man who would become the unknown soldier. And he came on the show and told how he went into this chapel, how the sunlight was streaming through the stained glass. And again, this is an actual fact, there also was some organ music. It was quite a scene. And as he told us, something instinctively drew him to one of the caskets. Somehow he sensed that man had made a great contribution. And he went over and placed his baton upon that casket, and that man then became the unknown soldier. It made quite a feature on We the People when it was broadcast.
Well, in just a moment, we're going to turn to another of the many great shows that you were associated with, Dick. But first, this message.
Choosing where you will bank is for some people a matter of taste or convenience. For others, a matter of economics. Banking at Burritt Mutual Savings Bank might satisfy all of these preferences for you. Over the years, since 1889 to be exact, Burritt has always tried to be friendly and cooperative in its relationship with people. Its officers and tellers are particularly selected for these qualities. From a business standpoint, Burritt is large, strong, and successful. It's a mutual type of institution, organized and operated for you, the customer. Offices are maintained at two locations in New Britain, at Corbin's Corner in West Hartford, and another will be opening in January on Town Line Road, Rocky Hill, to serve Wethersfield and Rocky Hill people. You are always welcome at Burritt, either as a depositor or a borrower. As the only bank in New England with Mutual in its name, it has to live up to the reputation of being the people's bank. Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, member FDIC.
Our guest tonight on the Golden Age of Radio is Richard Dana, Assistant Director of the Division of Humanities and Communication Arts at Manchester Community College. We've been talking about We the People, for which you were a writer-producer, Dick, and now let's turn to another aspect of your career. Ed?
Well, of course, this other show I think is even better known. It was called Your Hit Parade, and for many years it featured the top 10 best songs in the country, done every week with Mark Warno, Frank Sinatra, and many people like that.
I was the writer for a period of time of the continuity. There wasn't too much writing on the show, but I wrote all of the song introductions. They're very brief and very telegraphic, but had to be the right words. As the writer, I did attend all of the rehearsals. Frank Sinatra, at that period, was the singer on the program. His career was relatively young at that point. Of course, he was a great, great talent, and at that in my memory, a very gracious and a very friendly fellow. Incidentally, he had a standby who at that point in his career, being new in his career, was not well known at all, but he was a wonderful fellow and a wonderful talent. That was Vic Damone. He was a standby on the program.
He made it too. Well, the excerpt we're going to play does include that famous opening of the Tobacco Auctioneer. I'm sure that's what you're referring to.
Yes.
This also is interesting because W.C. Fields is on the program, which surprised me. I didn't even know that myself, but he actually was part of the permanent cast at one time on that show.
It was not the time at which I was writing the continuity, Ed. I do know that is the case, but I was not there at the time.
And then, of course, did you write the fanfares, too, for the number three, number two, number one songs?
It's interesting that you ask that. We had what was then known as a Bible. We had a large loose-leaf notebook that had been prepared by George Washington Hill, who was the sponsor of the program. He was an expert in broadcasting, and he wrote explicit directions as to how those fanfares should be done, and incidentally, how the continuity should be written. And his examples were extremely good.
All right. Shall we listen, Ed?
Listen to the chant of the Tobacco Auctioneer. All done. Sold to the American Tobacco Company. Remember, with independent tobacco experts, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-1.
Lucky Strike presents Your Hit Parade, starring America's outstanding comedian, W.C. Fields, with Al Goodman and the Lucky Strike Orchestra playing all America's choice in popular music, as revealed by a nationwide survey of sheet music, record sales, and dance requests. W.C. Fields is lurking behind the scenes somewhere, and you'll be hearing from him shortly. But right now, on with Your Hit Parade. Al Goodman starts our musical ball rolling with a tune that's climbing one spot to second place this week. Stop Beating Round the Mulberry Bush, number two. Number seven, light up a Lucky while you listen to the new ballad that's entering in seventh place this week, While a Cigarette Was Burning.
You know, that program and the music brings back memories that I didn't know I had stored away. It's amazing. That show sounds so fresh. Well, Ed, you said that W.C. Fields was going to appear?
Yes, he appears with Hanley Stafford, who radio fans remember as being the daddy in, what was that show?
Baby Snooks.
I got my fry tonight.
A Lucky Strike extra. Al Goodman and the orchestra present a special arrangement of a hit tune of 1926. I Know That You Know.
That's what sketched that. As I was telling you.
Please lower your voice, Mr. Fields. And remember, do not mention the product.
No.
We have announcers for that particular phase of our oral information.
Well, as I was telling you out there, I was swimming to Catalina Island. My bathing suit started to smoke.
Oh, yes?
I was swimming awfully fast.
Remarkable, but please keep your voice down.
Yes, certainly. I encountered a seal on the way over. He was exhausted.
Oh, not really.
Yeah. He swam over to the mainland to see the Hagenbeck Wallace Circus that was playing in Torrance.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. It was very nice for the seal to call his friends, but do lower your voice.
Oh, yes. He knew one of the trained seals with our circus.
Oh, now, a little lower, please.
Okay. In fact, he used to be in show business himself.
Himself,
yes. Yeah, but he retired in California.
Oh, like most actors do.
Yeah, I threw him on my back. He helped paddle every once in a while.
Yes. A very considerate seal, but
I
just
didn't
hear quieter.
Considerate seal? Yes, it was. He remembered me from the old Tunipore show. Where's the mob, I says. There's all living in the cove over there. We die for coin.
Oh, lower your voice, please.
Yes. Ridiculous racket, he says. Customers toss big lock washers covered with silver paper. Says we think they're buck pieces and die for them, only to find we have been hoaxed.
hoaxed. Now, huh? Look, I don't wish to be rude, but your yarn sounds a trifle extravagant.
Oh, God.
And the audience prefers the music.
Oh, the seal said I know the French connoisseurs, eh?
Oh.
Seal says I know we don't die for coppers, so when they throw the washes over covered with silver paper, they yell, "Hi-o, silver!"
Oh, please, please.
Huh? Yeah, deceitful lot, the seal says.
Oh, I've never heard of a talking seal.
Is that so? Extraordinary.
Oh.
I had a talking dog once. The ventriloquist sold him to me.
Oh, Mr. Fee.
Yeah, and the last thing the dog said before the ventriloquist left was, you sold me, eh? Well, I'll never say another word as long as I live. Oh. And he didn't either. Where was I? Oh, yeah. The seal's on my back all the time, and I'm swimming like fury. Meaning fast.
Yes, I guessed as much.
Yeah. But
now
the thing I miss most, he says, you know what it is? You know what he says?
Uh-huh. Here it comes.
Huh?
With my eyes and mind wide open and in full possession of all my faculties.
Yeah.
What did he miss most?
Captain Woodward, he said, our trainer, used to have me smoke a Lucky Strike cigarette.
I knew it! Get out! Get
Wait a minute. Wait. I'm playing in the Middle West for a year. I was like a fish out of water, he said. Long time no see, I said.
Oh, this is trouble. Out you go.
Wait a minute.
Shut up and let them play the music.
A fella tried to kill his sister in Winnipeg.
Outside!
Wanted her sealskin coat.
Get out! Get out! Get out! Get out! Come on!
That's a beautiful sequence. Well, let's see, Ed. We're listening to a hit parade from the 30s. Do you know specifically what year, by any chance?
Yes, 1938. Eh?
That's right. And all right, now I'm going to put you on the spot. If you haven't heard the tape, what was the number one song?
Stardust.
You get a big fat zero for that one.
Number one. Up among the leaders for the sixth consecutive week, here's the song that's returning to first place on your hit parade. I've Got a Pocket Full of Dreams.
Even with an empty purse, 'cause I've got a pocket full of dreams.
Wouldn't take the wealth of Wall Street
for a role playing ancient bronze,
and to calculate
I'm worth my weight in golden rods. Lucky, lucky me, I can live in luxury, 'cause I've got a pocket full of dreams.
Your Hit Parade, your nationwide authority for the most popular tunes in America, played by Al Goodman and the Lucky Strike Orchestra. Don't forget, next week Your Hit Parade will be back over this same station with another program of All America's Choice in Popular Music and All America's Choice in Comedy, Mr. W.C. Fields of the W.C. Fields Promotions Unlimited.
Well, unfortunately, it won't be back at the same time next week, but it is a memory from out of the past, Your Hit Parade. And we'll return to Richard Dana and his career during the golden age of radio right after this.
This is the time for New Year's resolutions. The Burritt Mutual Savings Bank would like to offer you one which may be the best one you ever made. Why not resolve to open a savings account at the Burritt and join in on the fun of helping Burritt reach its second $100 million in assets? You may do this at either the Main or Slater Road office, New Britain, the West Hartford office at Corbin's Corner, or the new office, which will open soon on the Wethersfield-Rocky Hill Town Line. Save where your funds are insured, where the highest dividends are paid, and where you join in the progress of the fast-growing, strong Burritt Mutual Savings Bank. Highest dividends paid. Cordial service rendered. Make that resolution now, today. Save beginning with 1971 at Burritt Mutual Savings Bank. And now back to Dick Bertel.
Richard Dana is our guest tonight, and Dick, we're going to turn now to the radio documentary, one of the great shows on radio during the late 40s, with which you were associated, Exploring the Unknown.
It was a great show, Dick, and one of my greatest pleasures in thinking back. It was a program that was produced by Sherman Dreyer, who was a very brilliant director. The sound effects on the program were particularly outstanding. I remember that writers such as myself loved to work on the show because Sherman gave us a lot of scope, was a great taskmaster, would often get the very best out of us. And then he had a separate and very lengthy sound rehearsal, very innovative in his sound, very precise, which meant a lot because very often, or rather perhaps too often, shows were done without due attention to sound, and we writers suffered when that happened.
Well, this particular excerpt we're going to hear is one very somber in contrast to the Hit Parade. It was about the atomic bomb on Hiroshima and the development of the bomb. Do you remember working on that script?
Yes, I do remember, Ed. Like any of the programs that we did on Exploring, we researched very carefully, very carefully. We were assigned the scripts weeks and weeks ahead of time, which was a lot in those radio days. We had the full use of the library and other consultants. We steeped ourselves in the subject and then would write an overlong draft, which we would pare down to make more precise and more communicable.
Revere Copper and Brass Incorporated, founded in 1801 by Paul Revere, presents Exploring the Unknown. Hours and 59 minutes ago, an atom bomb exploded over an obscure atoll in the Pacific called Bikini. This is an important day in the history of man. Revere Copper and Brass Incorporated, makers of the famous Revereware copper-clad stainless steel cooking utensils, manufacturers of copper, brass, bronze, magnesium, aluminum, and steel, brings you the facts, not the rumors. The significance, not the fears, of the atom bomb, as the men who made the bomb would have it told.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Clifton Fadiman. You may still remember that the German V-2 rockets traveled 3,600 miles an hour. So you may be interested to realize that today's experimental atom bomb in the Pacific was 2 hours by rocket from New York, 3 hours from London and Paris, 2 hours from Moscow. We are forced, unless we are too lazy even to think, to consider an overwhelming question. Man controls the atom. Can man control those who might misuse this power? How to crack the atom? Scientists for many years tried to find the answer. They thought of nature's powerful sledgehammer, lightning. Fritz Lange and Arne Brosch of the University of Berlin slung a long cable between two mountain peaks during a storm, and from it ran another cable aimed like a gun at a plate of brass 1 inch thick. They hoped that a bolt of lightning would crack the atoms of which the brass was made.
Look, Lange! We're picking up more and more charge.
Behind the shield, Brosch. Here it comes.
Look, the brass plate was ripped like paper by that bolt of lightning. Our experiment's a failure. We'll have to try again.
Yes, but how can we control such power?
Natural lightning, nature's sledgehammer, could not be controlled. Therefore, science, and science means men working together all over the world dedicated to exploring the unknown, science resolved to build a device to generate artificial, man-made lightning. In 1932, at the University of California, Ernest Lawrence reasoned,
"You remember how David knocked out Goliath? He put a stone in a sling and whirled the sling faster and faster till it generated great speed and force. Why can't we spin lighter atoms as bullets faster and faster until they pick up enough momentum to smash a heavier atom and release atomic power?"
And science built an atom smasher called the cyclotron. Let's go into a laboratory.
In the great room stands the cyclotron, a metal drum sandwiched between the poles of a giant electromagnet to control the course of the whirling atoms. The experiment begins.
Is the first target ready?
Just a moment.
The first target is the element lithium. The whirling atoms are to hit it and knock off electrical particles from its nucleus. They, in turn, are to speed at the second target, the element uranium, which, because it is the heaviest of all elements, has atoms that are unstable and therefore more likely to be completely knocked apart and smashed.
Okay, let's go.
Current on.
Hydrogen atoms, electrified in a glowing arc, feed into the drum and race faster and faster. They're given a shove by the magnets and whirl to the opposite side, where again they're shoved. These giant shoves of power accelerate the electrical particles 15 million times a second. They go faster, faster, up to 25,000 miles a second, whirl through an opening and hit the lithium target. On the other side of the lithium, nuclear particles are jarred loose and slammed toward the final target, the unstable atoms of a heavy element, uranium. Billions of these particles miss the target, but at intervals, a single one hits an atom of uranium, stabs into its heart. The uranium atom is jarred, disrupted, its energy released in a surge of atomic power.
Does it bring back memories to you, Dick?
It certainly does.
It's
very
amazing.
Very keen memories.
All right, let's go back now to the bomb on Hiroshima.
Exactly 20 days later, one lone B-29 was winging its way across the Pacific to Hiroshima.
Enola Gay to base. Enola Gay to base.
Base to Enola Gay. Everything all right?
Okie doke. Last message. So long. Radio blackout now imposed.
Attention crew. Goggles on. And wear them. Bombardier, take over.
Bomb away, sir.
What have we done?
Enola Gay to base. Enola Gay to base. Mission accomplished.
Mission accomplished, yes. But what mission? What does it mean to unleash the power that warms the sun and hurl it upon a modern city? In the words of an aerial observer,
a giant ball of fire rose from the earth 10, 20, 40,000 feet in mere seconds, and the mushroom top of this pillar seethed and boiled in a white fury. No longer smoke or dust or even a cloud of fire, it was a living thing.
The facts are simple enough.
A city the size of Birmingham, Alabama, obliterated. Only a few shattered buildings remain, gaunt skeletons rising from the awful desolation. 10,000 people instantly killed, 125,000 subsequently killed by the bomb's after effects.
No, it shows some rather remarkable insight, I think, into the terror and the drama of the bomb. A short time after the bomb was dropped, people weren't ordinarily thinking about it in those terms at that time, were they?
Well, Dick, some people were, as those of us connected with the program. It does seem to cast a light to the future. It was a very perceptive producer. It was a perceptive program. And Mr. Fadiman also, of course, was a man of great perception. I'm very proud of that show.
We'll get back to your plans at Manchester Community College, Richard Dana, right after this.
Have you ever sat in front of a roaring fire on a cold winter's evening, thinking about how you would spend $1 million? Unfortunately, most of us will never have to solve such a problem, but we often wish we could. Don't sit and dream. Act. Open a savings account at the Burritt Mutual Savings Bank and enjoy a high return on your money with the ultimate in safety. As a mutual savings bank, the Burritt is owned by you. Its depositors and the deposits are insured by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, an agency of the United States government. When you think of saving, think of the Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, with two offices in New Britain, an office in West Hartford at Corbin's Corner, and another to open soon on the Wethersfield Rocky Hill line. Don't forget, the longest journey begins with a first step. $1 million is a long way, but you will never get there or anywhere until you start. Do it now at Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, the mutual bank that belongs to you.
Well, Dick, it's been fun tracing the past, in a sense.
It has for me.
And let's look toward the future now. You are Assistant Director of the Division of Humanities and Communication Arts at Manchester Community College. And I know you have some exciting plans, don't you?
Yes, Dick. I'm very excited about the plans at the college. I was hired, I would believe, principally to plan and instigate a series of courses in broadcast instruction, instruct young people as to how best to get into broadcasting as a career. I find it very stimulating to be working with the youngsters and the young people, and I'm looking forward to building a communication center. We are working slowly, we're working soundly with due respect to budget and our obligations to the state, but I believe that as early as next fall, if I'm fortunate, we may have a half dozen communication courses in operation, and I'm looking to a long career.
Oh, that's wonderful. Wonderful. Richard Dana, thanks so much for sharing your memories with our Golden Age radio audience tonight. Ed, what's on tap for next month?
Next month we have another giant, Dick, Goodman Ace of Easy Aces. He'll be on with us on January the 26th at 9:06.
I'm very glad to hear that. I'll certainly want to hear that program.
Well, let's make sure that we're all on hand then. January 26th, 9:06 on WTIC for Goodman Ace on the Golden Age of Radio. This is Dick Bertel.
And this is Ed Corcoran.
Good night.
The Golden Age of Radio is brought to you by Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, serving Connecticut residents since 1889. This program was produced and edited by Brian Hartnett and engineered by William Kaluch and Bob Schirago. This is Bill Henry.
Don't touch that dial. Listen to...
Foods Company presents Willard Waterman as the Great Gildersleeve.
Texaco service stations and dealers in all our 48 states present for your entertainment Eddie Duchin and his music. Graham McNamee. And Ed Wynn, the fire chief.